Welcome to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly recap of the precious metals markets and the news that moves those markets. As always, I'm Tori, along with Miles, the chart expert, and the wise old sage Rob here to add some color commentary and wisdom. But without further ado, we start with the weekly charts. Miles, take us away.
I'll take the word expert. That's not what you usually call me when chart it comes monkey. To the charts.
Chart monkey, yeah. You're an expert in some things, but we in won't go there.
In some things. Everybody's an expert in something. So let's take a brief snapshot at the precious metals charts here this week, starting out with gold down about 1.5%, but certainly not telling the whole story, sitting at 3290. So it did inch back below 3300 today here on Wednesday. Looking over at silver, doing a little bit better than 1.5% down. It's down 2%. And also right at 3290, although you got to move that decimal point over a couple spots, $32.97 time of recording. Platinum, a couple other white metals we like to take a look at just to round out the precious metals. Platinum is pretty much dead even this week, sitting at about $1,065 an ounce, and that is following a pretty significant 11% jump last week. Now, platinum sister metal palladium, not doing the same thing as platinum. Palladium's down about 7.5% this week. So up about 9.5% last week, down about 7.5% this week. Palladium all the way down to $957. So platinum is now over $100 higher than its sister metal palladium.
Yeah, and Miles, platinum is actually over $1,080 right now. So that $100 separation is increasing.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's even jumped up since we put our notes together for the show earlier today. Yeah, looking to finally see platinum take a little bit of a step above palladium, which I know a lot of us have been waiting, what, a handful of years for that to happen right now? It's so good to see that coming. Quick glance over at the non-precious metals, the most important one, just because we like to check it from time to time. I'm going to toss copper out there. Even though it's even from our recording last week, it had a pretty big week, up and down as much as 4%, and is currently sitting at $4.60. It is in the middle of this massive trading range, over a dollar, 25, 30% trading range it's been in for a while now, and it should technically be climbing, but I know with so much movement in the commodity prices lately, people have been eyeballing copper, and that is something that we do like to bring up from time to time. All of this does fall on the back of the US dollar, which is also even over the past week and is sitting just below the 100 line. We did drop back below that 100 line. We've come back up to it, sitting at 99.85, and it is definitely a line in the sand. With the Moody's downgrade last week, plus a pretty spectacularly bad bond auction here recently, it's not surprising to see the dollar is continuing to lose some steam. And finally, for our weekly charts, the S&P up about 1%, sitting a little over 5,900 and really languishing here at a pretty important decision point.
In terms of that weekly recap, a lot has transpired. I'd say with that S&P figure, yes, we're up maybe 1%, but most of that occurred yesterday as a result of Trump saying that he was going to pause these tariff increases. You know, he had proposed a 50% tariff on anything coming out of the EU. And so the markets loved the fact that there was a pause. So that pause will carry to July 9th is now the target. And then the dollar, obviously, that Moody's downgrade was another piece of news. Fitch and the S&P had already downgraded U.S. credit rating in years prior. This is just the most recent one. But again, it's enough to certainly move the dollar and to move gold a little bit. But all that being said, let's zoom away here a little bit and go a little more macro and do a deeper dive, starting with gold.
I actually don't have a ton on gold from a charting perspective here this week, as far as the weekly goes. Now, when we zoom that out, I think it's going to open up a bigger conversation that we all got into earlier when we were chatting just about what is going on in the gold market and the role it's playing today. So gold is holding within this beautiful declining trading range. We've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks. We spiked into that 3,500 price, and we've had this lovely stair step action down now for the last month or so. So the question, of course, has been, where is gold going? And we're at another one of those decision points. If you're picturing the chart or looking at a picture of the chart, you're seeing gold putting in what we call lower highs and lower lows. So it's making this stair step pattern down. We've had a couple touches to both sides, and it's staying within this really parallel trading range that's sloping downwards. But guys, it's sloping towards a couple things that are pretty important.
Right. It's sloping towards the 618 fib. Also, the 200-day moving average is moving higher. I know you love this, Miles, where you could see the 200-day coincide with the 618 fib at around, what, 30?
3,000.
3,000?
Yeah, 3,000, around 3,000, yeah.
Around 3,000. So seasonally, we're coming out of the spring season, which has been the strength for the metals market the last few years. And technically, it does appear that we are going to see gold soften maybe another 7, 8, or 9% from here. But then you look at world events, and it's a crapshoot.
Miles loves it when those points align, when he yeah. can find, not to speak for you, Miles, I think it's your second favorite thing next to me, when you see multiple signals all align telling you where prices are going to go. And this is a really fascinating chart to me. And we're not saying, look, this is guaranteed. Chartists such as you, Miles, will say that ultimately we're going to end up there. The news will vary as to why it gets there. And the timing is unpredictable. But if you were to draw this out, you could say, well, it's simply possible to predict the timing of it. In a sense, what you're saying, Rob, with the seasonal weakness that we tend to see in June and July anyway,
yeah,
it really is shaping up beautifully as a great opportunity to add more significantly to ounces than just maybe your monthly or semi-monthly acquisitions.
Right.
Yeah, I love when you speak for me, as long as you're just repeating exactly what I say verbatim.
That's perfectly fine, Tori.
Yeah, what can I say? 20 years now, Tori, we've been working together, and you're finally starting to just say what I say.
Half as long as Rob.
I know, and none of us can keep up with Rob.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, combined, we can do about half as well as Rob can. You're completely right. One of the things I like to look for from a chart perspective, because all a chart is really doing is telling you, like, what are people doing right now? That's it. So it's not magic, but it does give us an idea that people out there who buy and sell things based on charts do so based on certain criteria. I just like when a lot of those different criteria all come in and line up at around the same price level.
We're talking about very intelligent buyers right now. This is not a bottom-up market. It's a top-down market. You're talking about the big money, the commitment of traders, the central banks, the hedge funds. I mean, they watch this. These are the waters that they swim in. So if charts predict behavior and the behavior is coming from knowledgeable buyers who are allocating percentages, we're probably going to see a very brief touch close to 3,000, and then that's Katie bar the door.
Well, and you talk about allocating percentages. Look at that IMF chart that we put up in the last week or two, talking about the percentage of gold holding by sovereign banks and nations increasing recently, upwards of over 20%, maybe over 25% now. Where at one point here in the last 10, 15 years, it was as low as 9%. 9% of the world's currency backed by gold. Before my lifetime, but not too much before, it was 100%. So we're definitely seeing a failed experiment come to an end. And like you said, from the top down, the big boys are starting to refill the coffers. It brings up a question that, Tori, you threw at us earlier today, and I don't necessarily know if I know the answer, and I think it's something worth thinking about. Gold's up pretty good over the last couple of years here, but is this even really a bull market?
Or a bear market in bonds and currencies?
It's a far scarier thought, and probably more accurate, honestly, for it to be a bear market in fiat currencies and bonds, because this is a global bond issue.
And it's right? A global gold market now. It's not controlled by New York or London anymore.
That's right. And you do have an issue with all global fiat currencies because they're all in the same boat. That's right. Struggling with debt and deficits and money printing. This failed experiment that you alluded to, Miles, is a much, much tougher thing to fix than somebody coming along and saying, oh, gold is just overly speculated on and
overcrowded,
Yeah, yeah. Overbought.
Yep.
Yep, that's right. Gold responds. It reacts. It's not out there predicting, setting its own market, in a sense, with a bunch of speculation loading. And we've said over and over again, this is a central bank-driven right. market. That big money, the smartest money in the world, knows that this is a de-dollarization issue. This is an anti-U.S. debt issue because of the concerns that the whole world has with being linked to it or overexposed to it.
Well, and they also know that the bond cycle typically trades 30 years of declining interest rates and 30 years of increasing interest rates. You can't set your watch by it, but you can do pretty darn well by thinking of a 30-year cycle. And we hit the bottom of the bull market cycle in the bonds 5 years ago in 2020. And the 10-year yield was 0.5% on the 10-year treasury note. It peaked at 5% not too long ago, but we're still at about 4.5%. That is a huge increase in the yield on the 10-year treasury, which affects mortgages, which the Federal Reserve is holding a ton, trillions of dollars worth of mortgage-backed paper. Miles has the balance sheet of the Fed. They have been decreasing their balance sheet, but there's so many other things that are going on. Why don't you talk about what the Secretary of Treasury just said about how they're going to stimulate the economy and pay off, or at least try to close the gap on the budget deficit.
Oh, he has said so much since the term started, I mean, even prior to the term, and yet to try to downplay the U.S. debt. He came out and said, oh, we're not worried about U.S. debt dynamics. Yeah, you are. We know you are, and you have to be. It's the bond market that spooked the president into reversing on some of the tariff policies. So that is issue number one. He also said there's a lot of resistance to government spending cuts. That we know to be true. So they can say that they want to shrink the debt and deficit, but they have to be allowed to do that. They have to have the authority and the ability to do that. And if they're circumventing Congress, then of course these things are going to be challenged in the lower courts, and ultimately everything is going down to the Supreme Court. But yeah, they are facing a lot of resistance to what they would choose to do. But Miles, you brought up the point earlier that the one thing that this administration is showing and this president is showing is that it's all about stimulation first and then tightening the belt by appearance in some aspects, but not without its negative effects of slowing the economy or economic growth in any form or fashion. So bringing me to the third percent quote, we've inherited a 6.7% deficit to GDP, the highest outside war or recession. Our focus is to grow the economy faster than the debt. That's how we will stabilize debt to GDP.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Maybe faster than the deficit.
Well, but look at velocity. Velocity is already turning up. Now it's plateaued, but I think you'll see second quarter velocity in 2025 start to rally again. That's inflationary. And that's yep. why I'm not really worried if gold retests $3,000. Big deal.
No, we've seen a global M2 growth. It continues to rise, just that money supply, which is inflationary. But what happens when the world starts moving away? You've got this huge transition out of the U.S. dollar and into gold. So central banks are acquiring physical gold. And that's just one example of this massive rotation out of U.S. debt and into physical gold. And central banks are doing that. You guys, this isn't a six-month hold.
No.
This isn't a speculative, oh, let's park it temporarily on the sidelines. This is a decade-plus long approach to slow turning ships. And this deficit, Miles, to your point, the conversation has, in fascinating fashion, changed from debt
to deficit.
To deficit.
Yeah. They're trying to ignore the elephant in the room, and let's talk about the little mouse called the deficit, not the gargantuan debt that it keeps adding to.
Well, and it's an issue of do what we say, not what we do. Because the same people that are buying gold right now are the people that otherwise would be buying those bills and bonds.
Right.
And they're doing so at a much, much lower rate because yep. we've got the additional top-down money going into the precious metals market, and the average investor is yet to become involved in this market.
Well, that leads to a point that I want to make too, because when people look at the gold market, they'll say, well, it's dominated by fear or greed. And I think that's a red herring. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's involved, but really it's about a loss of confidence, a loss of faith in the financial system or the currency or pick whatever. That's why people buy gold. They're not trying to get rich and they're not scared, huddled in their bomb shelter. It's a lack of confidence. And right now, the retail buyer in America is liking what they see. Consumer confidence has done very well lately. So they're really kind of sitting back and they're not buying gold. They are buying stocks because they think that's where the action is. But they're neglecting the fact that the big guys, they're buying gold.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, for me, that buying of that gold, again, is a long-term hold that we obviously encourage and educate our clients on approaching gold through the same lens, not chasing cycles or any of that. Yeah, we can see opportunities for buying dips and that sort of thing. But Rob, in your lifetime and my lifetime, we've seen $35 gold. Now we're looking at $3,335 gold, right? That's not going to change because the biggest shattering of the confidence that you talk about would come from a default on our debt.
Oh, my
right?
word.
Now you've got a U.S. dollar crisis. Well, long before they do that, they'll just go back to the tried and true method of monetizing our debt, where the Federal Reserve is the buyer of the debt. And that's when their balance sheet starts growing again. And who knows how high that can go? I mean, they started doing that post-World War II at great levels. Then we saw a financial crisis. We saw it with COVID, and their balance sheet got to $9 trillion. And yeah, it's shrinking, but guess what happens? I mean, we'll see it at $20 trillion because they need to allow the government to operate because the government will not tighten its belt enough to where you are literally reducing the deficit or balancing the balance sheet.
What if they mandate pension funds to hold 20 or 25% of treasuries? There's a number of routes that they can take. They can set up a sovereign wealth fund of all the natural resources and lands and properties they own, and they'll strip mine the coal, and they'll drill baby drill for oil and gas, and they'll cut the timber. They'll do whatever they need to do to generate income and offset the debt. So listen, we haven't even begun to see what this government can do. And I'm not pointing at this particular administration. I'm talking about the federal government itself.
That's a pretty slippery slope when the federal government starts mandating what private pension funds can do.
But they will survive. The government will do what it takes to survive.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's the number one rule for any politician. Like, their number one responsibility is to get reelected. The constituency comes second. So they'll do whatever they have to survive. This, to me, just sounds like the beatings will commence until morale improves.
Yeah. Well, the morale's not going to improve, it seems like, until the tariff picture becomes more clear. I don't know why everybody's so fixated on that. It is a component of the economy. It is not the component.
No.
And we knew that this administration was inheriting a recession. There's just no way around it. Bear market and a recession. Both are looming. And I can't imagine that they're capable of staving that off for the entire year this year before that reality sets in. Again, that's okay too. There needs to be a washing out. But it is a problem when everybody is reacting so emotionally and so significantly to one issue. There are so many larger issues, and the news that moves these markets could be something completely unrelated to the economy. It could be geopolitical. We don't know what that major impetus is going to be. It could be another country defaulting on its debt. It could be a major disruption to the global trading system aside from tariffs because of sanctions like they're talking about with Russia. Again, now like a much larger sanction against Russia and its allies, sanctioning its allies that trade with Russia in order to dissuade them trading with Russia. So you talk about poking the bear. There are a lot of things that can transpire that, again, gold reacts to. And they can downgrade our credit rating, which is long overdue. It never should have been AAA still with Moody's. But all that being said, you guys, it's almost like there are too many fundamentals to count.
Well, and that's really true. And my hope is that this current administration can really help get this ship turned because this has been looming for way prior to this administration. They've inherited a real mess. The people are being spoon-fed from the media what the media wants to distract them with, in my opinion, which I do think is deficits or the Diddy trial or whatever. This is real. People need to consider their future. and what they're going to do with their allocation.
And some are allocating into silver, because if you're concerned about the gold price, you know, I hear from clients, well, you know, is it at a top? It's faltering here at the top. We had that intraday high of $3,500. And here we are talking about the probability or possibility of it retracing to 3,000.
On its way to 7,000.
That's right. No, that's what cycles do. And that's been going on since 2017, when this most recent bull market really got legs. You see stair-stepping up in the big picture.
It's the nature of any market over time, and certainly in an inflationary situation, that you're going to have these periods of growth. Then you have a period of irrational exuberance. And then you have a period where the irrational exuberance goes away and you get back to something sustainable. I mean, that's just two steps forward, one step backwards. They don't have to be even steps. But the idea of taking a cooling off period is not unheard of. It's expected in all markets. Doesn't matter if it's a stock market or precious metals or anything else. Now, my big concern, you know, when you look at it from a chart perspective, like I said earlier, I always like to look for those opportunities where from multiple different perspectives, things are converging at a similar price. So that just adds some extra weight that there are probably going to be a lot of people for a handful of different reasons all deciding to make a commitment at a certain area. So you can track that stuff over time in a market that's acting healthy. The problem is that sometimes things happen that cause a market to act unhealthy, and you end up having to zoom the camera out a lot bigger. So we've been talking about gold goes from 1900 to 3500. Let's say it comes back to like 2950. You've got a really healthy, like two steps forward, about a step backwards, and then you kind of keep going. And great, that's normal trading. You learn that in third class, your freshman year of college. But what if some other catalyst, maybe it's the bond market? I mean, the S&P is right at that decision point.
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
It's on the knife edge. Yeah.
We're sitting slightly below the previous all-time high. We're just coming off a, 20-some% decline. We've rebounded the bulk of that position back up, but we're really coming right into that top-end trading range right now. If we turn down from here, you're looking at a similar or further decline from here that we had a couple months ago. So you see something like that happen, and you can get these unwinding situations take place in markets, especially nowadays with algorithmic trading models and computers and just the fire sale concept of the derivatives market back in the 2008 crash. That stuff can happen. Well, all you end up doing is you have to zoom your chart back out, because now you're no longer talking about gold going from 1900 to 3500. You're talking about gold going from 1050 to 3500. And you'll find a landing zone between those two areas, because the 1050 is where we bottomed out after the previous run-up. So the charts give you the viewpoint, the fundamentals kind of build how the trends work over time. And then we've got these seasonal pressures that happen from time to time as well. So I think those are the three key parts. And I know you guys would certainly agree with me. I just tend to think that the charts beat everything else, because they do. So, but that's just my opinion.
I don't disagree with that. It's the news that changes the timing. And it can be a compilation of factors. But let's not forget, we've got some geopolitical tensions building again. I alluded to the Russian deal. So,
and then there's Israel and Iran there. Yep. Israel is saying they're going after him, and Trump wants to get Gaza fixed and done.
That's right.
There's so many other things that could propel this market one way or the other.
That's right. And again, it could be another country, like the issues that you're seeing in Japan. Yep. You know, they're eyeing more rate hikes because their consumer inflation is accelerating. Now, same thing's going to happen here when we start to monetize debt again. That's money creation. And the more money we put into the system, the more inflation grows, and the weaker the purchasing power is of the dollar, and the higher the gold price climbs. So if you believe as a listener that they are going to have a legitimately stronger dollar, reduce debt and deficits, and not be monetizing debt and shrinking the Federal Reserve balance sheet in perpetuity and doing all these things that are responsible and all that, well, then the gold price would go down if you believe that. Those are much harder things to fix. And the loss of confidence in our debt, in the U.S. dollar denominated debt and assets, is something that is a much bigger problem to fix. And don't look at gold simply as an isolated market that gets overbought and oversold.
But I think most people are mostly concerned about how much is it going to cost to put gas in the car and food on the table. And I do think this administration is focused on lowering the price of living, and that's going to help the average consumer a lot. In the meantime, we've got big picture stuff, not just what it costs to live, but big picture stuff for the future, for their retirement, for the wealth that they've tried to accumulate.
Can they stimulate economic growth and not stimulate an increase in the cost of living?
We'll find
out.
Well,
regardless of what the cost of living goes to, I know an ounce of gold buys 350 loaves of bread. So I'm going to keep putting a little bit of my money into the metal, regardless of what the price is. That's going to do it this week for Golden Rule Radio. As always, we appreciate you stopping by. If you liked what you heard, head on over to our website. We can be found at McElveny.com. And if you'd like to discuss your personal portfolio with one of the advisors here at McElveny Precious Metals, you can reach us at 1-800-525-9556.